Well, today we have a very special episode. We're here with David Swanson from worldbeyondwar.org. We're speaking to you from Moscow, Russia, where we're going to be here for a few weeks talking to different experts, trying to get a feel on what's happening in this new Cold War or second Cold War. We've already spoken to a number of people, Vladimir Kozin, who's a high-level analyst for the Russian government and military. Yesterday, we were with President Gorbachev. You've been running around with Russia today. They've been interviewing you. Tell us first about World Beyond War, about your organization, your radio show, your activism, your books, and then let's talk about how you see U.S.-Russia relations today.
Yeah, well, thank you. World Beyond War, which the website is worldbeyondwar.org, is a group that a number of us started up a few years ago that's been growing steadily, and we, for the first time, have hired more staff in addition to just me, and it's an attempt to create a movement that's focused on steps toward totally abolishing war, because it's sort of been lacking. We have great movements spring up against specific proposals for wars or new weapons or drone kills or the military budget each year. Let's cut it back a little. But if we're going to look at how do we actually get rid of war, then we need an educational process that does away with the idea that some wars are bad but other wars are good. It looks at all the damage that the entire institution of war does in terms of draining money, destroying the environment, stripping away our rights, the damage apart from particular wars. And then we need an activist movement that goes after the most strategic targets to take us in steps in that direction. And we need it to be global, not, you know, focused on one country alone and based in one country alone. So we started with this statement, a couple sentences, I want to work to end all war, and gotten people to sign it in most countries on Earth, so, you know, 150 some countries, and then organized some of those people to be organizers and get more people involved. And we've started doing a lot of events, and we're hoping it will continue to grow.
So your main focus is war primarily and everything else that filters from that?
Yeah, well, we argue that if you're in favor of anything else that requires funding, you need to be against military spending because it is where all the money is going. And if you want to protect the natural environment, you not only need funding to do that, but you need to stop the single biggest destroyer of the natural environment that we have, which is the military. If you want to protect civil liberties, you have to do away with the idea of the need for secrecy that comes out of war. If you don't want your local police militarized, you got to do away with the weapons profiteering system that just pours more and more weapons into the military that hands them on down. If you want to combat racism or sexism or violence domestically, I mean, all of these things fuel war and war fuels them in return, So a lot of these issues are connected, but the one that is rarely addressed that we thought there was a gap and a need for was taking on the war machine.
And what are your thoughts of the new Cold War? I like to call it the second Cold War. In the U.S. we're seeing this unsubstantiated demonization of Russia. Yeah. One of the things that struck me here yesterday, a bunch of us were taking the metro. We stopped to look at a map to figure out where we were going. And without asking, two young Russians came up to us to help us find our way. It's just this, we feel safe here walking around. People are helpful. People are nice. People are going about their daily business. I have Americans that say, what are you doing in Russia? Aren't you scared? And it's just a bit ridiculous. So, I mean, what are your thoughts?
I think, this media obsession, unquestioning obsession with the Russian influencing of the U.S. election, which is stated as fact, even though they're talking about an investigation into it, they don't say alleged or potential or possible. It's like established as fact, has sort of morphed into, as you say, a demonization of anything tied to Russia. So if Trump has mafia connections, as long as they're U.S. mafia connections, hey, that's respectable. But if any ties to Russians, you know, and so it's become any association with Russia or Russians in any way is somehow evil. And so part of why I wanted to go here, and I think a number of us probably had the same motivation, was to be able to go back to the United States and say what we expected to be able to say, which is we went to Russia and it's not dangerous, it's not crazy, it doesn't hate you, the people are humorous, friendly, engaging, they will immediately tell you how much they love America, they don't resent any of the abuse and crime that the United States government has dished out to their country over the decades. They actually want to be friends and work together. It's a place you can come and visit and have a good time as an American tourist, mm-hmm. and in the process, get to know some Russian people. If you still have grievances with the Russian government, okay, as long as you can, you know, substantiate them with some evidence. Like all governments, the Russian government has many flaws, but this demonizing of a whole people and a whole country has to be countered somehow.
And what's the real issue though with the new Cold War? You know, because in the first Cold War, they said, you know, communist expansion, even though Stalin was for socialism in one country. What's the story? What's going on right now? Who's seeking what? Where who's the real aggressor in this case?
Well, you know, in a sense, the first Cold War didn't really end except on one side. There were people, smart people, anti-war people, moral people, who at the time that the Cold War supposedly ended, that is, the Soviet Union collapsed, which is what really did happen, said, oh, well, we're going to get a peace dividend where the United States is going to stop all these wars because all these wars have been for fighting communism. Mm-hmm. Well, fighting communism was the current excuse of the moment for all the wars that had been part of the U.S. government's modus operandi from day one, from before there was a U.S. government. And that never changed. In recent years, you've had the excuse of terrorism. You couldn't say, well, if terrorism ever goes away, then the wars will go away, because it won't ever go away. But with Russia, you know, the U.S. really needed Russia if it couldn't have China as a big enemy. You know, Iran wasn't really gonna sell enough weapons. And you've had, in recent years, you've had some really humorous hearings in the U.S. Congress with top officials just unable to explain who the enemy was and desperate to come up with an enemy. Well, what did they do with Russia? They facilitated a violent coup in Ukraine. And when the newly installed and partially Nazi government of Ukraine began threatening the right to speak Russian, to use the Russian language, and so forth, and the people of Crimea voted overwhelmingly, and not under any threat of violence, to rejoin Russia. Well, then you immediately had this story of Russian expansion and Russian annexation and Russian invasion. And we had big news stories in the United States. Russia has invaded Ukraine. And it would sort of fizzle out as there weren't any photographs of the invasion and nobody knew what it was all about. And a couple weeks later, Russia has invaded Ukraine, you know, over and over again. And then a plane shot down and determined conclusively without evidence that Russia had shot it down. And so Russia became depicted as an imperial aggressor, by a country that spends, you know, well over 10 times what Russia does on the military and has bases in numerous nations surrounding Russia, while Russia, you know, has nothing of the sort near the United States. Russia is an evil aggressor. You must protect the world from Russia. This is what the Pentagon wanted. I've seen articles in Capitol Hill newspapers like the Politico newspaper, where you have Pentagon officials, anonymously, but high up Pentagon officials, openly admitting that the whole thing is created for, number one, profits, weapon sales, and number two, bureaucratic interests of the military and NATO wanting to have some reason to exist and expand. I mean, they're just open about this in a way that would have been, you know, considered shameful in decades gone by. And so here we are with, you know, good liberals having added on the motivation that somehow it's anti-Trump to be anti-Russia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, good conservatives or right-wingers just happy to be anti-Russia, you know, leave Trump out of it. But, you know, and in reviving habits of the previous Cold War, it's just come so easily to the mouths of, you know, media spokespeople in the United States.
And something interesting you mentioned, there's a few notes that the Soviet Union wrote to the USA in the 1950s to France. You can find them online, these official letters sent from Russia. And it was mentioned by the Russian military analyst who spoke to us that the Soviets and the Russians wanted to join NATO.
Yes.
They wanted to be part of this collective security organization to have this a more secure and peaceful world.
Yeah.
But they were just constantly rejected, as you say. Why is that? And I think you answered, because the U.S. needs an enemy.
Yeah. You know, when the Soviet Union collapsed, the Warsaw Pact also collapsed. This had been the justification for NATO. So the reason for NATO to exist went away. But NATO didn't want to go away. NATO wanted desperately to figure out some way to go on existing. And, you know, the first major way it figured that out was to have a war in the former Yugoslavia. Well, that wasn't going to work well with Russia. You know, Russia wasn't going to play along with that. NATO needed to become a military force that goes off and fights wars in various places. You know, pretty soon, you know, it ended up being Afghanistan. But, and you know, Russia had been there and done that, the Soviet Union. But Russia was, you know, just remained desired by the Pentagon and openly, you know, stated as such in Pentagon documents without any break from the previous Cold War to the current Cold War, as if there was no end in between. Russia remained a desired top enemy. And you know, you couldn't let your top enemy join your coalition of forces to protect the free world from that enemy. It wasn't going to happen. But yes, Russia was open to it. And of course, the obvious solution was not to have the two enemies join the one alliance, because then who are they going to go attack somebody in Africa or Asia? No, get rid of it entirely. And the U.S. ambassador, the Russian ambassador to the United States, who's been much in the news lately, and who did he talk to when, and who lied about meeting with him, he came to my town and spoke at the University of Virginia, and I asked him, you know, why should NATO continue to exist at all, and weren't you promised at the time that you went along with Germany reuniting that NATO would not expand eastward? And he said, yes, we were promised that. And he came within an inch of saying NATO should be abolished. He sort of put it very diplomatically, as he's trained to do. But he said, I was a Russian ambassador to NATO, and I had faith in their honesty and openness, and I don't anymore. You know, and this is the general story, that the new Russia after the Soviet Union trusted that promise and trusted that, you know, NATO and the United States were losing their reason for hostility, they would cease being hostile. You know, Eisenhower had explained the motivation of profit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have Russian people we're meeting with here quoting Eisenhower at us. But, you know, to have imagined, no matter where you were in the world, it was a little naive. And so here we are this week, being hit by this tidal wave of new naivete, if it's sincere, that Trump is going to be our friend, you know? And it's like Trump is going to be the new Ronald Reagan. And we're reduced to explaining the relative intellectual superiority of Ronald Reagan, of all things. And they're telling us that Trump is a real man and a businessman, and we trust Trump. And
I think they're trying to remain as optimistic as possible.
Yes.
Under the circumstances.
Yes.
Given what Trump had initially said, and then we have the deep state to factor in. You know, just like with every presidency, it sprouts up.
I mean, it should tell them something good about the U.S. public that Trump got elected saying he would get the U.S. out of Afghanistan and NATO was obsolete and we don't need any more wars and all this. You know, I mean, that ought to tell them something positive about we, the people of the United States. But Trump, the idea that that there's any coherent ideological position in that head of his, I mean, is just laughable. The idea that anything he says is something he's going to stand by and fight for is just ridiculous. You know, and he switches his position 180 degrees in the same conversation without any input, or after 2 minutes in the room with somebody who knows something about the topic. And so, yeah, I'm glad they hold out hope. Somebody should. But the idea that it's, you know, that Trump is ready to work with them, you know, that's not where we are.
And what are some takeaways from this trip so far from you, and what are your thoughts on where we're going to go navigate, where's this ship going to navigate of this new Cold War? Do you see it escalating? You see it going steadily as we've been so far?
You know, I'm not as good at predictions as I am at agitating for the outcome I want, but you know, Mikhail Gorbachev told us that things had been worse in the past. We can debate whether that was true, but he said when he first met with Reagan, the heads of the two countries, the two empires, hadn't met for 6 years. And when they met, Reagan's cabinet was against the meeting, and they walked out of it, he calling Reagan a dinosaur and Reagan calling him a communist. And you know, but they kept meeting, and they got somewhere. I think There was also a great deal of public pressure from both sides and around the world for those meetings to happen and disarmament to happen. It wasn't just the personalities and the specific jokes they told in the room that determined that outcome. And so I think we have to build public pressure for disarmament. And, you know, one way to look at Trump is let's figure out a way to get the media to like him for avoiding a war with North Korea or Russia, even if he's the one who provoked the steps toward war in the first place. Because thus far, the media has only given him the love he lives off when he's bombed something. Or do we get Trump out of there? Because there's never been a president more worthy of impeachment.
Well, I'm just curious, based on what a lot of people talk about impeachment of Trump, based on what, though? I'm just curious.
Well, some groups I work with set up a website at impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org on the day he was inaugurated, laying out the case that he was violating a couple of different sections of the U.S. Constitution in his business and financial dealings that got him, on the one hand, favors from U.S. states and the federal government itself, and on the other hand, favors from foreign governments, or even the possibility, even the appearance of the possibility of such favors was forbidden in the Constitution. You know, as problematic for the loyalty and the interests of an elected official, especially a president. But then, you know, the impeachable offenses started piling up. He unconstitutionally tried to ban Muslims and said as much, and a court overturned it and he changed a few words and reinstated it. This is someone who was elected in an incredibly corrupt process, who threatened violence against voters, who fought the counting of ballots in every court case he could get at, who threatened to lock up his opponent, was given incredibly unfair media coverage that gave him the nomination, that had the assistance of Republican secretaries of state in numerous states stripping people from the voting rolls because they appeared to be African American. Endless reasons why that election is actually illegitimate. They have nothing to do with Russia. Then, you know, if you go through the dozens of crimes and abuses before he became president, which are impeachable, and since he's become president, including numerous illegal wars and threats of war and bombing campaigns, you know, the problem, of course, is that the only thing that interests the Democrats in Washington, D.C. is the Russia story. And so you have you know, a story that may or may not have anything underneath it, which means even if you went for that impeachment, which risks creating hostility with a, you know, a nuclear armed government as a byproduct, you might get him acquitted in the Senate. You know, and if you keep pushing him and you make impeachment part of pushing him to be hostile toward Russia, you know, it's the worst thing you can possibly do.
But well, right, because that could backfire, because as a way to distract from the impeachment, he could start a war.
He could start a war with
Russia. Like Bill Clinton in the 90s with his impeachment process.
So, you know, but we're between a rock and a hard place, because here he is willfully and intentionally destroying the Earth's climate, which is going to kill us a little more slowly. This Donald Trump signed a public letter to President Obama saying, if you do not act now, the climate of the Earth is in danger. You must, you know, and now he's president and undoing the tiny steps that Obama took. This is a crime prosecutable now as a crime against humanity in the International Criminal Court, much less an impeachable offense.
Let's get back a little bit to the main theme, which was the new Cold War with Russia.
Yeah.
And one theme that I gathered was Gorbachev said, and the other military expert Kozin said, and what are your thoughts or suggestions, that the first steps that we need to take are to organize a summit between the United States and Russia, and to talk primarily first about the military, the problems between us regarding the broken nuclear treaties and the military issues. Would you agree with that, or would you add anything?
I think what Kozin said was that it should be exclusively on the topic of disarmament. And I think that's importantly narrower than all things military. And I don't want Trump and Putin getting in a room and putting together a joint plan to destroy ISIS or something of the sort. I want Trump and Putin getting in a room and putting together a plan to start eliminating nuclear weapons. You know, and Kozin gave us a list of 16 mm-hmm. steps, and he added a 17th that wasn't on his list because it's in the news, which was declaring no first strike. But his second step, number one on his prepared list, was to get these missile bases out of Romania and the one being constructed in Poland, which are on the border of Russia, which you'll recall until just recently, and even still in some cases, the U.S. government pretended was a defense against Iran, despite it not having anything to defend against. Mm-hmm. They're sort of open now, as Russia always knew, that these are aimed at Russia. And, you know, we have to have these two governments, whether it's the presidents or committees or special commission, but we have to have these two powers talking together about, you know, scaling back these missiles on hair trigger alert, these nukes ready to destroy the world, the potential for a flock of geese or a weather balloon or a drunk personnel to create absolute apocalypse. It's crazy. It's in many ways more dangerous than the last Cold War, because there's no movement pushing back against it, little awareness of it, and poorer maintenance and supervision of the weapons involved, and proliferation to numerous countries. You've got 9 countries now, and many more looking, like Saudi Arabia, as if it doesn't have any source of fuel, looking at getting nuclear power so that it can be a step away from getting nuclear weapons. And Kozin himself admitting that's what Saudi Arabia is doing, but saying spreading nuclear power is just fine, no problem. So, you know, we have to get a radically different approach to nuclear weapons, which the non-nuclear nations are leading on now, not Russia and the United States, and nuclear power as well.
All right, and any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with? World Beyond War, New Cold War, activism?
Well, I expect I will learn a great deal more in the coming days before we leave Russia, and I would recommend highly to people, particularly people in the United States, that they come here, and they come to Iran, and they come to North Korea. You know, you can safely go as a tourist to North Korea. They're not going to lock you up for, you know, buying an ice cream. Go to these places, meet these people, meet them by Skype, if not in person, and learn from them, even if it's just learning what their perspectives are. Because I, you know, I study these topics and I read all day, and yet just coming here in person, we've been here, what, 3 days? And I've learned an incredible amount.
Mm-hmm. All right. And your website is worldbeyondwar.org. You've got a book. You've got a radio show.
I have a radio show called Talk Nation Radio. I didn't put that nation word in there. I don't like nations, but it's at talknationradio.org and davidswanson.org. And I've got lots of books you can find there too.
And you give speeches, you create petitions, and you're all over the place.
Yeah, and I work for a group called rootsaction.org, and we do a lot of petitions and email actions and so forth.
All right. Well, thanks for this chat, for your work. And yeah, we're going to continue investigating here in Russia.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.